Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvos is daf Ayin. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is loan as Zechon Ishmael Slibagar Vela Bashmul. We're on Samach Tesamad Aleph, and we're behind. We're towards the top of Samach Tesamad Aleph, and the topic of discussion throughout the sixth parak, God willing, today we're going to finish the sixth parak, has been Nedunya. It's the dowry that is bestowed from a father to his daughter. Basically to kickstart the marriage. Marriage is going to require a little bit of an investment, and so to help kickstart the marriage, so it is expectation upon the father of the daughter to provide a dowry so that part of the so that hopefully they that at least they have a head start in life. This dowry is it's a rabbinic institution, but nevertheless it has a lot of teeth to it. We have been discussing the past couple of days this idea that this is such a strong expectation that the father writes over a dowry to his daughter that even if he dies, the estate is going to have to give their sister a part of the estate. How much of the estate? So like we discussed the other day, we first work with an umdana. We first try to figure out whether or not the husband the father, somebody who would have given a lot or given a little bit. Was he benevolent? Was he generous or was he stingy? And so that's generally speaking the benchmark we're going to use in terms of determining how much of a dowry the brothers are expected to give of the estate. But if that's not available information, or if we simply don't know, or I guess this is certainly an option, people are complicated. Let's say dad was both generous and he was stingy, and we're really not sure which way he would have gone in this direction either way. So then the halacha is you give a tenth of the estate. One tenth of the estate is going to be applied towards the dowry of the daughter, and that's how much she's going to get. To which the Gemara asked a day or two ago, well, if that's true, so let's say there are 10 daughters, does that mean that the 10 daughters are going to be really consuming the entire estate? And it's hard to imagine that the man has 10 daughters and that the sons are not going to inherit anything because the daughters are going to eat up the estate. To which the Gemara says, no, tenth doesn't mean tenth of the original, tenth means tenth of the remainder. Meaning whichever daughter comes first, she's going to get a tenth of, and then the next daughter sequentially is going to get a tenth of that. And the next daughter is going to get a tenth of that. What if they all come at the same time and all of them want to get married? So the Gemara said they're going to have to apply a formula. And the formula is it's going to be a tenth of that, tenth of that, tenth of that, depending on how many daughters there are. And then you're going to pool all that money together, and then that money is going to be equitably distributed amongst the daughters. That the Gemara says is a formula you're going to have to use if they're all coming at the same time. Where do we go to collect this dowry for the daughter getting married? So that's what we discussed yesterday. That was at the top of the Amud. Rav sent a letter to Rebbe. In other words, remember, this was the very top of the Amud in Samach Tesamad Aleph. Rav's letter that he sent to Rebbe was Bein Hashitim. He wrote it between the lines. And of a general letter of correspondence, and the question was that if the land, if property of the estate was either sold off or it was pledged, it was collateralized against a loan, so can she collect from that land? And Rebbe's response was, after all said and done, yes, that's correct, she can. And the reason why she can is because there's a lien that she has, meaning that dowry that the estate is expected to give her is more than just a nicety, it's more than just a pleasantry, it's a real bona fide obligation, and so therefore she has a lien against that property, and that lien against that property is going to entitle her to collect that land, even from the kuchos, even if someone bought that land. But she has now a pre-existing lien on that land, and that's created by the chachamim through this institution of what's called dowry, and therefore she can go ahead and she can collect, or she'll ask Beis Din to do so, collect against that lien. That was the opinion of Rebbe, which brings us now to the point where we left off yesterday, and now we're up to Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Yochanan Amar when Samach Tesamad Aleph, about 10 lines from the top of the Amud, and Rav Yochanan says Echadze Vechadze Mosiin, and Rav Yochanan says no, we do not go and we do not take for her parnas, for her mizonos. When he says Echadze Echadze, he means both the parnasa, both the dowry and the mizonos and the food that they have to provide for her, they don't take it from the kuchos, meaning there isn't a lien against that obligation, and so therefore any estate that they have on their hands that they have to use to, and is applied towards her nedunya. But any properties that they sold off, that they don't have to, not that they don't have to, sorry, let me say it better, let me say it clearer. She can't collect from those properties because she does not have a lien. So, Ibailu le Rav Yochanan lo shmiel le had Rebbe, ve shmiel le have a mekabale, odim o shmiel le velo mekabale. Gemara says, look, that psak of Rav Yochanan goes against Rebbe's psak. Okay, Rav Yochanan is going against Rebbe. Now, the Gemara offers two options over here. Either option number one, he knew what Rebbe said, and And I'm sorry, let me go in the correct order of the Gemara. So he didn't know that Rebbe offered a different psak, and had he known that Rebbe offered a different psak, he wouldn't have paskin against Rabbi. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is, no, he knew what Rabbi said, and nevertheless, he went against Rabbi. Now, it's interesting. We generally speaking, we draw a line in the sand between Tanaim and Amoraim. We generally say that Amoraim don't argue with Tanaim. That's one of the unwritten assumptions in Limud HaGemara. So you have a Tana. Tana says something. The Amora doesn't argue. So first of all, that's generally true, meaning that is a correct assumption generally in Limud HaGemara. But as we've already, the Gemara itself goes over a number of times. Rav, who's an Amora, so Rav can argue with a Tana. Meaning, because Rav is right on the border between Tanaim and Amoraim, and Rav has that ability to argue with the Tana. Here, it's a little bit fuzzier. It's a little trickier because we're now talking about Rebbe and Rav Yochanan. Rebbe was a Tana, last of the Tanaim. Or he was a Masada Mishnayos. He authored the Mishnayos. And Rav Yochanan was an Amora. Also first-generation Amora. Lived at the same time as Rav. But generally speaking, you don't get the sense throughout the Gemara that Rav Yochanan has the ability or the right to argue on Rav. Although the Gemara over here, meaning if you want to point to a Gemara where the Gemara has an indication that Rav Yochanan could argue with a Tana, or at least Rebbe, meaning Rebbe Huda Anasi, our Gemara seems to indicate that at least it's within the realm of possibility that Rav Yochanan could say something, even though it's going against Rebbe. So the Gemara now would like to argue the following. Let's see. Let's see whether or not Rav Yochanan knew of Rebbe's psak or did not know. Again, just to reset the issue. The issue is the estate has to give her 10% for that dowry. That's the halacha. The question on the table now is whether or not she has a lien against that obligation. And if she does have a lien against that obligation, so let's say the estate sells off any of those properties, can she collect from any of those purchasers with her already established lien? So Rebbe says there is a lien against that property, and right now the way the Gemara is presenting it, Rav Yochanan disagrees. Okay. Now, is Rav Yochanan familiar with what Rebbe said? So the Gemara says, well, let's consider the following. De'idmar. Misha meis v'nishtei banozu ben. Person dies, and let's say he left two daughters and a son. V'kidma rishon v'nat lisa nechasim. Okay? First daughter came, and she collected her 10% for a dowry. Fine. V'lo yispika shnei legabos acha meis ben. And now the second daughter is prepared to collect her 10%, but she just didn't get married yet. And then what happens? The son dies. Okay. Now, with the death of the son, so now what happens in the world of Yerusha? We know, the halach is that a son inherits the estate. Even if there are daughters, then the son is going to inherit the entire estate. But nevertheless, once there's no longer a son, so we know the halacha is that the daughters now become the next of kin. And the daughters are going to be yarish. They're going to inherit. So now the second daughter, so she's going to now be collecting half of the estate. So, lo yispika shnei legabos acha meis haben, amar Rav Yochanan, to which now Rav Yochanan issues the following ruling. Shnia vitra. The second daughter is going to be mevater, she's going to give up her dowry. Because think about it, her dowry is 10% of the estate. Okay, right now she's getting much more than 10% of the estate. She's getting 50% of the estate. But she's getting 50% of the estate to the exclusion of the 10% of her dowry. Now it is a little bit unfair. The first daughter came and she collected already 10% for her dowry. So now when you make a division of the remainder of the estate, so she's getting 50%, but remember, she already got, on top of that, she already started off with 10% of the estate, and then she's getting 50% of the remainder. So it is a little bit unfair to the second daughter, but Rav Yochanan says, okay, I understand it's a little bit unfair, but right now, she is the beneficiary. She's now inheriting the property. She's getting half the property. You know what? She's not going to get the 10% dowry on top of that. That's Rav Yochanan's psak. So I'm Rabbi Chanina Gedola Mizu Amram Mosil Parnas Vem Mosil Mazonas Vatamar Shnia Vitra. Rabbi Chanina hears what Rav Yochanan says, and Rabbi Chanina says to Rav Yochanan, I cannot imagine. Meaning, how can you be right? We know that when it comes to the dowry, not only is the dowry an obligation for the daughter, but even if the properties were sold off, you're going to go to the buyer and you're going to say to the buyer, look, I'm really sorry. There was a lien on the property and we're going to take it away from the buyer in order to satisfy the obligation of dowry. So we're taking property from somebody else's hands in order to award dowry to the daughter. And you're suggesting that the second daughter is just going to give up that dowry? It can't be. So we extract Parnas, we extract dowry. Now, we don't extract mezonos, but we do extract for dowry, and you think that the second daughter is just going to give up on that dowry? Period. Period, question mark, meaning Rabbi Chanina turns to Rabbi Yochanan and says, I cannot possibly imagine that you're right. Now, at which point now the Gemara is going to pause, and the Gemara is now going to say, basically think out loud. Now, at that point in time, Rabbi Yochanan's reaction should be what? Well, who said that? Ella, I'm sorry. So Rabbi Yochanan doesn't respond that way. Meaning, it sounds like from the flow of the Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan did know who in fact said it, and nevertheless he ruled against it. So v'dilma la'olam lo shmi'alei v'chishmi'alei kabel. So the Gemara says maybe it's not true. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan did not know about the Pesach of Rebbe, and if he heard the Pesach of Rebbe, he would have accepted the Pesach of Rebbe. V'shani hasam dika revach beise. And the Gemara says, then look, maybe in general it's true. Rav Yochanan would have changed his mind, and he would have said that the dowry, she has a lien against the estate for her dowry, and she can go and she can collect her dowry even from sold off properties because she has a lien. Gemara says maybe that's true, but maybe this particular case is different. Why? Because she's getting half the estate. So Amale Rav Yemele Rav Ashi Olam Yatz Ashkecha Mitzia Ba Madika Revach Beis Hachanami Delo Yatzvin Leisa Nachasim. So the Gemara says really that's a good argument. That's a solid argument, meaning that just because now she's getting half the estate, she's going to forfeit her dowry. Gemara says, let me ask you this question. Let's say she wins the lottery. Now, I know that's not exactly what the Gemara means, but basically, that's what the Gemara is saying. Let's say she comes across a mitzvah. In other words, she just walks into a lot of money. You want to tell me at that point in time that she's going to forfeit her dowry just because she walked into a lot of money? Meaning the dowry is an obligation that the estate has towards her. The estate has to give her 10% in order to satisfy the obligation of dowry. And just because she walked into a lot of money doesn't mean she's going to forfeit her dowry. So So the Gemara says, no, I could still make an argument. And the argument could be, look, you're right. In general, we're never going to say that the daughter of the deceased father is going to forfeit her dowry, meaning that's an obligation, and she's expected, and she's entitled to it, and the rabbis instituted. But maybe in this one limited scenario where she's inheriting her father's estate, 50% of her father's estate, maybe in this scenario one could make the argument that she is going to be that she'll just simply forfeit the rest of her dowry because anyway she's getting half of her father's estate. Okay, period. So at this point in time, here's what we know and here's what we're still unsure about. We know what Rebbe's psak is. Rebbe says that when it comes to Parnassa, she has a lien against that obligation, meaning it's not just that the estate is obligated to give her a dowry of 10%, but that obligation is so strong she even has a lien against it. All properties are encumbered against that obligation. She has a right to collect properties that are sold off. That's the opinion of Rebbe. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Did Rav Yochanan know about Rebbe's Pesach? That the Gemara leaves unresolved. That we don't know. And if he knew about Rebbe's Pesach, would he have changed his mind? The Gemara does not know that issue. The Gemara is going to come to a bona fide conclusion in just a moment. Amar Ameimar. We're right in the middle of Samech Tesem and Aleph. And the Gemara now is going to continue with the following analysis. As we've said already a number of times this morning, already it's become very clear that the dowry that the father has to give to his daughter is an obligation. It rolls over to the estate. If the father dies, the estate has to now pay 10% of its own assets to the daughter in order to satisfy this obligation. And now the Gemara is going to go in the following direction. It's analysis. It's fantastic analysis of this issue. And that is, when the rabbis obligated the estate to give her money, does she become like a yoresh? Does she become like an inheritor? Now, obviously the Torah does not afford her the right to inherit. Again, if there are no surviving sons, so she's going to inherit. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about where there are sons who survive the father, and they're going to inherit, and she gets 10%. Did the rabbis couch that in a Yerusha-like like obligation? We'll explain how that plays out practically in just a moment. What's the other possibility? It's right. It's not a Yerusha, but she's a Balas Chov. Exactly. In other words, it's just an obligation. The Gemara is going to be discussing and debating this very point. Amar Meimar. Bas Yoreshes Havya. So the Gemara quotes the name of a Meimar. She's a Yoreshes. Meaning, she's going to inherit. That means, again, that it's not the Torah telling us that she inherits. That's not what the Torah is saying. When the Chachamim afforded her this opportunity, this obligation to receive 10% of the estate, they framed it as if she was inheriting. So the Gemara says, now, if that's true, what does that mean? Are you telling me that the estate, meaning the sons, can't pay her off? Meaning there is 10% of the estate that she's entitled to. Now, as a Yoresh, that means now that I am a part owner of the estate. That means now that the brothers can't say to me, hey, look, we'll keep all the properties, and you know what? Let's say you're 25% owner. We'll just buy out your shares. Can't do that. Meaning, as a Yoresh, I am a 25% owner of all the estates. And what we'll have to figure out is how to equitably distribute the estates, and the properties. But you can't buy me out. And the Gemara is asking the question: does that the same thing true over here? Meaning, you can't buy her out of her shares of the estate? So I'm really in. So Mamar says, correct, that's right. I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. She's a Yoreshes. So Ibai Lasuka Bechada Ara Hachanami Delamasa Mesalekla. And let me continue asking. You mean to tell me that if we just decide, you know what, she'll get that land. That land is about 10% of the estate. So you mean to tell me that we can't do that? Meaning, because again, she is a 10% owner of the estate, which means then that we can't make a dictator. We can't just simply assign for her which land is hers. She is part owner of the estate. Amar Lein, and once again, a Maimer says that's correct. That's exactly what I'm saying. Okay, so what are you hearing from this dialogue? Basically, what you're hearing from this dialogue is I can't believe you're right. I mean, that's a very strong way to look at her dowry. That she becomes a Yoreshes, she becomes a part owner of the estate. Basically, they're asking a Maimer, do you mean to tell me she's a Yoreshes? And Maimar twice answers, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Ravashi Amar Bas Balas Chovi, Havya. Ravashi disagrees with Maimar. Ravashi says, no, she is not a Yoreshes. But the way that the rabbis instituted that dowry go to her is that she's a Balas Chov. She's owed an obligation. V'afa Maimar Hadarbei. And you so heard this from the tone of the Gemara just a moment ago. Like, Maimar's position was such a chiddush. Maimar then eventually came back to Ravashi's side of the issue. The Amar of Minyomi Bered, Rav Nechumia, Havakamina Kamida Maimar. At one point, I was in front of Maimar, V'asei Ha'isisa. And the Gemara told the story where a woman comes in front of Maimar. L'kameda Havakabaisis Nechasim. So, and it was a very simple issue. In other words, the dad was dead, and now there was an estate, and she was claiming was she deserves 10% because of her dowry. Now, the Gemara is going to comment that I knew at that point in time that what a Maimar would have been okay with, acceptable with, is the idea that the surviving brothers could just simply buy her out of that 10%. Meaning they don't have to actually give her property, but they could just simply, whatever the estate was assessed at, 10% of it, they can do a cash buyout of that percentage. D by Lesuka Bazuzi, I have a Messiah leg. If they would have bought her out, a Maimar would have been fine with it. How do we know all of this? The Gemara says, because here's how the dialogue went in court. And because the brother said in court, in front of a Maimar, you know, if we would have had money, we're cash poor. But if we would have had money, we would have bought her out. And the ishtik velo amrluhu velo midi. And a Maimar didn't say anything. And that means, this was the Gemara's analysis, that means that because a Maimar didn't say anything, he agreed with that point. And interesting, Tosos, look at the third Tosos on the Amud. The ishtik mikan ragil rabbeinu tam kishay yoshe bedin. Let's say Rabbeinu Tam was sitting in court, right? He presided over Beis Din. And Kishayosha Bedin Amram Mibali Dinim Migazim Lachaveiro. And let's say something was said in court which was a perfect exaggeration of what really the halacha is. Meaning someone said something in court that was just simply not true. So Rabbeinu Tam, what was his reaction? Now remember, he's a judge. And the judge's job is to be impartial. But if someone said something that was simply not true, in their exchange with one another, Rabbeinu Tam would say, you know, that's not right. Right, that's incorrect. So ki lo is chayev sheim ein lo ledayin lamar kein maya mochich rab min yomei midishtek ameimar. And Rabbeinu Tam, one of his proofs is our Gemara, because what happened to our Gemara? Ameimar didn't say anything. All he was doing was just presiding as a judge in a court. And the brother said, you know, if we could, we would have bought her out of that dowry. But we're cash poor. We don't have the money. And therefore, we're going to have to give her 10% of the estate. So they said something in front of Ameimar. And Rabbeinu Tam says, and what did you see from our Gemara? That had that been incorrect statement, Ameimar would have gotten up and Ameimar would have said, you know, that's not right. And he didn't say anything. And it's clear that Ameimar only accepted that statement because it was a correct statement. Interesting. So Rabbeinu Tam learns from our Gemara that as the head of a Beis Din, so you can only allow correct statements to be said, halachically correct statements to be said in court. Okay, back to the Gemara. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, so now, even though there was a moment where we had analysis about how to view the dowry, is she a reshes or she is a balas chov, but the Gemara now is settled on this, on the position that she is a balas chov. Gemara says, fine. Who is she a creditor of? She's owed a debt. Is it a debt from the estate, or is it a debt directly from the brothers? Now, I know that sounds like subtlety. It sounds like minutia. It is minutia, but it's important minutia. Why? So the da'aba is chav havia da'aba o da'achi. Is it an outstanding obligation against her father, meaning father's no longer alive, against the estate, or is it a direct obligation that she has against the brothers? L'mayin afkamina l'migba l'beinu nishlo b'shvua v'zibor b'shvua. I don't know if I remember, but this goes back, well back. But the fifth parak of Gittin, we're going to see this together. Whenever you collect money from an estate, meaning that really you were owed, the principal borrower was the father, he died, and now you're collecting against the estate, and,
you know.
Yeah, so the two things now play out. Number one, and if you want to collect from the estate, you have to make a shvua. Right, even if you're holding paperwork in your hand and you have a note, you still have to make a shvua. Okay, that's number one. That the kids cannot be expected to know exactly what the father paid off, what he didn't pay off, and even if there's a note held against the estate, it doesn't matter. The note holder still has to make a shvua. That's point number one. Point number two is that whenever you're collecting from the assets of orphans, so you can only collect from C grade property. Properties are graded in one of three grades: A, B, or C. Right? Id is Bainan is Zibaris. The best, the middle, and the worst. Whenever you go to the estate and collecting from the estate, you can only collect from Zibaris. So, if this dowry is fundamentally against the father, and the kids are just simply satisfying their father's obligation, so when she comes and collects, A, she has to make a shvua, and B, she can only collect from Zibaris. On the other hand, if the obligation is principally against the brothers, so that means that the principal debtors are right here. And therefore, she can collect without having to make a shvua, and she can collect with Beinonis.
In terms of shvua, it's understandable why like the kids would not be expected to know whether the father paid off another loan, right?
Right.
But with her, it's known whether she was paid
right.
or not.
So right.
How could they put in the same category?
Right.
I mean, they know whether she got her.
Correct, but once we operate within a certain rule, in other words, so then we're just going to follow the rules. You're right. In this particular circumstance, it's not an outsider. I agree with you. It's an insider to the family. Great point well taken. Tashma de Ravina Agbe Labarte de Ravashi. So the Gemara says that Ravina allowed the daughter of Ravashi to collect Mi Marbere de Ravashi from Mar, the son of Ravashi, meaning her brother. So presiding on this case was Ravina. The principal litigants in this case, I mean, they were not real litigants. I mean, you know, they kind of agreed. But she, the daughter of Ravashi, collected from her brother, and she collected Beinitz below Shvua. And she collected mid-grade property, and she didn't have to make a Shvua. So what did that show us? It showed us that her claim is not against the father, not against the estate, but directly against the brothers. So, mi breder of sama breder of ashi, ziboris b'shvua. And then the Gemara points out that when she was collecting from her brother, that wasn't the only surviving child that she had from the father. There was another surviving child, but he died already. And now she's basically collecting from her nephew, so who inherited the other half of the estate. So when she collects from the nephew, so now it's not from her brother, it's from her nephew. Her brother's no longer alive. So there, she had to make a shvuah, and she only collected ziboris. But again, but what you see from the story is that when collecting from the brother, that is a direct claim against the brother, not against the estate, and therefore she doesn't have to make a shvuah, and therefore she can collect ziboris. Sorry, she can collect benonis. So the Gemara says that when this woman comes to collect from you for the Isur Nechasim, so you can allow her to collect even from Itzrabila. Itzrabila, Rashi points out, Moshav Amas Harechayim, the base of the millstone. Base of the millstone is put on the ground. Rashi points out it has the same status as karka, and therefore she can collect even from that item. All right. One of the interesting things we're going to see over these next two lines of Gemara is that again we know that parnasa can only be collected from karka, can't be collected from movable items. And then there always is that very interesting discussion: what is considered karka? Meaning a house is obviously sitting on the ground. A house has the status of karka, right? That's clear. What the Gemara is telling us as a chiddush is that the base of the millstone, now I don't exactly know what it looks like, I don't know the size of it, but because it settles on the ground, so that also has the status of karka, even though in theory you could pick it up. And Ravashi tells us that we are in the yeshiva of Kahana, so you know what he allowed to collect for the dowry? He allowed it to collect a rent. Rent accrued from renting your properties, that has the status of karka. Now that's fascinating. Meaning the idea that when you collect rent, that rent income is viewed as karka. Now think about it for just a moment, that's very hard to imagine. Meaning the house itself is karka. The sale of that house is for sure going to fall into the category of karka. But if you rent that house and you get an income based on that rent, that income is viewed as karka? That's hard to imagine. You're right? That's right. That's peros. That's money. Tosos over here is bothered by this idea of the Im Tomar Hechidami. The Tosos says, Ibeschiros, Shiavo Menabatim. Let's say we're talking about rent that was accrued because you were renting out your house. Pshita Shetarefis, Tahame Karka Inu. So that, Tosos says, is for sure considered karka. Meaning, rent that has not yet been collected. Tosos goes on, v'ibeschir shegavu kfar, but if it's rent that's already been collected, hani metatale mamish, there's nothing more movable than the money that you already collected. V'yeshlam ha-demayu shehizkira ha-bayis l'shana v'amad bo ha-socher chatzi shana v'af agav dekvar nischayev amash amad be-bayis gova v'lochashu metatale deskir sen mishlam mesel besof. Interesting. Tosos says, basically, an account receivable of your rental income. Meaning, the guy already was living in the house. Let's say you contracted for the rental annually, and you're only going to collect at the end of the year, and that was part of the terms of the rental, and he's already been living in it for 6 months. Even though there is an accrued rent that he owes you, if that hasn't been paid yet, Tosa says that falls under the category of karka. Fascinating. Rent that has not yet been collected, it's account receivable, it's not yet been collected, that's karka. Once it's been collected, that's metaltalin. Okay, so really very, very interesting discussion these past couple of lines of Gemara. What falls under the category of karka? What falls under the category of metaltalin?
It's money though. Money is metaltalin, not
metaltalin. It hasn't been realized.
Right, correct. But it hasn't been realized yet. And it's so, I know it's interesting. You know, you put me to the test before today's daf and said to me, how do you view rent? I would say it's money. Unrealized rent is not money. Unrealized rent is karka. It is fascinating. I don't know if I would have, I probably would have gotten that one wrong. It's better. In other words, her dowry obligation can only be collected from karka. Now, they can buy her out using money, but her obligation is founded in karka. So that's the difference between unrealized rent versus rent that's already collected.
There's no advantage between karka and metaltalin?
any lien that you have goes against the karka, not against metaltalin. That's your basic difference between the two. Okay, shalach le'Ravanan le'Ravuna. We're wrapping up the topic of dowry, and we have a fascinating story coming up right now. Rav Anan sent the following question to Rav Huna. Now, Huna Chavrein, this is how the correspondence starts. My colleague Huna, as we'll see, Rav Huna took great offense to being referred to as a colleague. Okay, generally speaking, right, you see the Gemara is very particular in many instances in terms of Rebbe Talmud. Talmud has to have the proper respect to his Rebbe, right? The amount of a year that you have for your Rebbe is Kamar Shamayim. It's like the fear of heaven. So you have to be very careful when speaking to your Rebbe, and we'll see that become clear through this story. So Rav Anan sent a letter to Rav Huna, and he starts off with the letter with Huna Chavrei, Shalem Ki Asya Ha'is Av Shalem, right? Peace be upon you. Mishalem Aleichem. Ki Asya Ha'is Av Kamechag Ba'is Nechase. Look, I'm sending you a particular woman, and she's going to come collect her dowry, and I want you to collect her dowry for her. And basically, just a letter, approbation, right? In other words, she's entitled; she deserves it. So, Havi Yasu Rav Sheshes Kame Amrle Zil Emale. So, Rav Sheshes at the time was sitting in front of Rav Huna, and Rav Huna says to Rav Sheshes, "I want you to do the following: go back to Rav Anan and deliver the following message to him. Now, I know the message is going to be strong, and I know you're going to be very reluctant to deliver the message to him. Uvishamta Yehiman Delo Amrle, and I will put you in chayim if you don't deliver the message word for word, exactly like I'm saying it to you right now." And it goes like this: Anan Anan. Right? You see, when Rav Huna refers to Rav Anan, so he's calling him by his first name only, without the term Rav. Anan Anan, Mimikarke Matatale. First, let me ask you a simple question. When I collect the dowry, do I collect from land or do I collect from movables? Uman Yasiv Be Marzicha Beresha. And does the Be Marzicha sit at the head of the table? So that second question we're going to translate in a moment. So also Rav Sheshes coming to Rav Anan. So Rav Sheshes now was told to deliver a message to Rav Anan, and he was told to deliver it word for word. So Amar Lei, so now Rav Sheshes is terrified to deliver the message in front of Rav Anan the way that it was said over. So he tries to cushion it a little bit. Mar Rabba V'Rav Huna Rabbe D'Rabba V'Shamut Yishamit Mandalo Amar Lei. So you are a great master, and Rav Huna, your Rebbe, is also great. And he told me that if I do not deliver this word for word, I will be placed in Chayrim. So in other words, I know the message you're about to hear is very strong, but these are my very specific instructions. V'ilav d'shamis lo hava kamina. Now, had it not been for the Chayrim, I wouldn't have said it over. So, you know, don't blame me, blame the Chayrim. So, and then he delivers the message verbatim. Anan anan mimikarke matatale. So, again, question number one: when I'm supposed to be collecting this dowry for this woman that you sent me, am I collecting from the movables or from the property? Uman yasa be'marchaza bereisha. And where does the be'marchaza sit at the head of the table? So, also Rav Anan coming to Mar Ukva, the story continues. Well, now Rav Anan realizes two things. First of all, he realizes that Rav Huna is not happy with him. Okay, he got that from the beginning of the opening two words, Anan Anan, and not Rav Anan. And also, as we'll see in a moment, he had no idea what that second question even meant. So Rav Anan coming to Mar Ukva. So Rav Anan goes to Mar Ukva. Amalei Chazimar Hechi Shalach Li Rav Huna Anan Anan. So first of all, Rav Huna sent me a message, and the message was Anan Anan, which means that he wasn't happy with me. And what's that all about? Va'od. And then he turns to Mar Ukva and he says, also, can I ask you another question? Marzicha d'shalach lo yadinu ma'inihu. I don't even understand that second question. I don't even know what he was talking about. So Amar Lei, Emily Easy. So Mar Ukva says, and this is always important, can you give me the whole story? Can you fill me in on all the details? And then when I have the proper context, I then will understand what's going on. We're now on the top of Samech Tes Amud Beis. Take me from the beginning. So he gave him all the details. So Mar Okva starts giving it to Rav Hanan. He says, "You don't even understand what the second question meant, and you're referring to him as Huna Chavrein, Huna my colleague. He's not your colleague. He's your Rebbe. And when you speak to him, you have to speak to him like a Rebbe, not like a colleague." So my Marzicha. So okay. So as long as now we got done with that story. So what does the word Marzicha mean? So Aval. The word Marzicha is referring to a mourner. Dechsev Kol Hashem Al Ta. Okay, don't go to the house of the mourner. Meaning, write the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Right, you're going to be mourning, but don't behave like a mourner. Okay, we see that throughout the Nevi'im, that the as part of the message that they're supposed to deliver to the Jewish people, so they have to behave in unusual ways. And over here, the message is that the Jewish people are going to be suffering so much tragedy that they're going to be so used to it. Now, as long as we touched on this halacha, we're essentially saying that the mourner sits at the head of the table. Shenamar evchar darkam ve'eshev rosh ve'eshkon kemelech bigadud. Kasher avelim yinachem. Just like when it comes to mourners, they're like a melech, they're like a king. They sit at the head of the table. In other words, the mourner, although he's in a state of mourning, but you're supposed to give him some kavod, you're supposed to give him some honor. It helps. It's slightly therapeutic. Okay. So yinachem acherim mashma. The Gemara over here just asks a textual question and a technical question. The pasuk does not say the mourner. It says yinachem. Yinachem is talking about the ones who are providing the comfort. So Amar Rav Nachman, it's like yinachem yinucham ksiv. So yeah, it correct. It does say Yinachem, but it could also be read Yunucham. Remember, there's no vowelization. So in the Bederach HaJush, it could be talking about the one actually mourning. So Marzucha Amar Mehacha, another pasuk that speaks to this idea that the mourner sits at the head of the table. Visar Mirzach Sruchim Mar Vizach Naasesar. He becomes like a prince, meaning he put the mourner at the head of the table. Sar Lesruchim Amrava Hilchasa. Okay, good. So that was the. That was the word that Rav Hanan had a tremendous difficulty translating. Now the Gemara points out, where are we? So we are at the point of concluding. In terms of the estate has an obligation of paying off a woman's their widow's ksuva. The estate has an obligation to support the widow and any daughters. The estate has an obligation to pay off a dowry. So the Gemara says all these obligations are paid from the karka, not from metaltolin. Okay, and as we pointed out already a number of times, we pointed out again, even the Gemara's conclusion is very clear. The Gaonim said that times have changed a little bit, and the Gaonim said that nowadays, the Gaonim, meaning nowadays, meaning Bizmana Gaonim, we're going back, you know, 9th, 10th century, the Gaonim said that nowadays we collect all these obligations from metaltolin and not just from karka, and that's... Why did they change that?
Yeah, why did they add? It was only on Karka. Why did they change? Plus, the possibility.
I mean, obviously, right? There's a halachic. Correct. There's a halachic explanation, one of which I don't perfectly know. And then I guess also, in other words, what's behind it is that, again, more protection for the widow, the orphan. I mean,
it's easier to pay.
Right, but meaning that's what's motivating them. But what's halachically behind it? So that I don't know. Meaning, how can they halachically, you know, circumvent what is a very clear conclusion of the Gemara? So there is a halachic explanation. I just don't have it.
All the categories are supported by everything. All categories, including like in the dunya, is covered by metaltolin also.
That's the Gaonim from the point of the Gaonim. But the Gemara from the Gemara standpoint, no. It's only karka. Okay, we're finishing up. We have a Mishnah. Hamash is Mos Labito. So let's say the father creates a trust account for his daughter, and there's a trustee, someone in charge of that money, and Vihio Meres Neman Bali Alai, and she says to the trustee, you know what? Look, I'm getting married. Give the money over to my husband. So Yasa Ashlish Masha Hishlish Biado Div Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that the trustee says no to the daughter, no. Now this is odd. This is obviously very strange. Meaning the money anyway is going to be given over to her, and anyway she's married. So why can't she just simply tell the trustee, look, give the money over to my husband? So as we'll see, it will become very clear from the Gemara. There's an idea. There's a concept, which is Mitzvah Lekayim Divrei Hameis. Meaning, it was a last will and testament of the father who was dying. He wanted this particular sum of money to be rolled over into a property. The trustee was given instruction of what to do with that money. He must therefore acquiesce to the instructions that were given to him. Not just acquiesce, but follow the instructions that were given to him. And so therefore, she can't, despite the fact that she's making a pretty common sense point, meaning I'm married, give it to my husband. No. The property is going to be bought with that money. And then obviously, after that point in time, that property belongs to her. But he has to satisfy the obligation, the instruction that was given to him by the dying father. Rabbi Yossi Omer, v'chiyeno el osada, v'hi rotz l'mochra, harei mechura me'achshav. So, and Rabbi Yossi argues with Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi basically says, look, common sense. The property anyway is going to be given to her. So what difference does it make whether the property is given to her or the money is given to her? So Rav Yossi doesn't agree with the Chachamim. The Gemara says, when do we even pay attention to her? Only after she's an adult, but when she's a katana, so there's nothing to talk about. No, a man is setting aside money for his son-in-law, likach mem sada lebito, to buy land for his daughter. So v'hi omer sinasa lebali. So and she says to the trustee, you know what? Don't bother buying the property. Just give the money over to my husband. So now, if she's already married, second stage of marriage, she has every right. However, if they've only underwent erusin, so then the trustee has an obligation to fulfill that which he was instructed. If she's a gadola, so then according to Rav Yossi, she could tell the trustee, just give the money over to my husband. He'll take care of it. Ketana beimin esu and beimin erusin yaseh shushma hushlash biyado. However, if she's a ketana at the time, so then we don't pay her attention. She's a ketana. The trustee has the money. The trustee's entrusted with the money. He's going to go and buy the property for her, despite the fact that her wishes are going against it. But again, she's a ketana. My beinayu ilema ketana min esu and ika beinayu dera meir saver shush biyado vasu rav yosi lememar afil min esu and nami gedolin ketana lo. So the Gemara says now, Where is the difference between Rav Yossi and Rabbi Meir? If we're talking about a minor who got married, say a mistake, the Gemara says, well, I understand, let's read on. That last line of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says, you know, Ketana, she does not have she doesn't have a halachic will. She doesn't have das. So Haman Ketanya, who is the author of that last line of the Mishnah? Elam Rabbi Yossi Amresha Shamas Mina Dam Rabbi Yossi Vichi Eina Ella Sadav Hiro Salamachare Mechura Meachshav Gedol Dabas Vina In Ketan Lav Bizvini He. Look, Rabbi Yossi, we already know what he thinks, because what was Rabbi Yossi's argument? Let her redirect the money, because anyway she could sell the property now if she wanted to. That only could be talking about an adult. A minor can't sell a property. So we already know that according to Rav Yossi, a minor does not have that ability to tell the trustee, hey, give the money over to my husband. So Ella Rabbi Meirhi, v'chaser mechzer v'hachi ketani. It must be that line of the Mishnah is speaking to Rav Meir. Yaseh shish mashu shish biyada ba'medvar mamorim in erusin aval min esu'in aval shish biyada ba'medvar mamorim b'gedol aval b'ktani ma'aseh ketana klum. So a ketana simply does not have a halachic voice. She does not have das. Ela gedola min erusin ika b'nayu. So the Gemara says, so the only difference between Rav Yossi and Rabbi Meir is where she's a gedola and she underwent erusin. So then we have a debate between Rav Yossi and Rav Meir. Rav Meir's position is, the father's wishes is that the trustee buy a property. Trustee has to buy a property. The Rabbi Yossi says, no, she already went through erusin. She has a husband. She can redirect that money to go to the husband.
If she's a gedola, what does it matter whether she's married or not? If she's a gedola, right?
Right.
So what does it matter whether she has erusin or not erusin? She could be.
Because she's basically, what she can do as a gedola is basically say to the trustee, I want to replace you with another trustee, otherwise known as my husband. As a katana, she doesn't have that right. Well, Ika Beinayu, let's just finish up. Itmar, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halachik, Rav Yosi, Rav Amar Rav Nachman Halachik, Rabbi Meir. And where do we end on this note? The Gemara says, Machlokas Amarayim, where we end on this note. Generally speaking, this is a tough one, because generally speaking, my Mamanos Halacha falls like Shmuel. Generally speaking, my Mamanos Halacha falls like Rav Nachman. They don't agree over here in terms of what should happen. We'll see in just a moment. The Halacha is going to go like Rav Nachman. And we treat ourselves to finish off today's daf with a story. Ilfa Talanashe Biskarya de Makusa. Ilfa was on a mast of a boat. Now, the last we left off Ilfa on the mast of a boat, so this had to do with Ilfa not becoming the Rosh Yeshiva. The Gemara in Tanis, it gives us the full version of this story, of this incident, where Rav Yochanan and Ilfa were walking together, they were working together, and Baskol came out, and the Baskol said, when are you going to become a Rosh Yeshiva? Rav Yochanan ends up becoming a Rosh Yeshiva, and what happens to Ilfa? So he doesn't become the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Gemara over there points out Ilfa was actually a bigger Talmid Chacham, and had he applied himself to just learning, so he would have become the Rosh Yeshiva. And upon realizing this, he was depressed. And so, the same Gemara that we saw there in Tanis, we see right now. Tanav Shebi Skur de Makusa Amr Ika de Aslam de Amr Li Milsa de Bei Rabbi Chiv Rabbi Osha Velo Pashtina Le Mimasnitsin. So Ilfa was saying, "Look, I'm fluent. I'm fluent in every Mishnah, every Brisa. You quote me a Brisa. The Brisas are all sourced in Mishnayos. So tell me a Brisa, and I'll tell you a Mishnah that supports it." So Nefilim Iskir V'Tavana. And it's true, he makes a really strong statement. He says, and look, and this is like, I'm so confident with my knowledge that if I'm wrong, if I'm unable to give you an explanation, I'll just throw myself right off the mast of the boat and I'll drown myself in the water. Okay, and point is, he was obviously very, very depressed. Asa usaba tanale, so... Now, it's hard to imagine someone's actually taking up on his offer, but Haomer Tanu Shekel of Niba Shabbos Urinli Tein Lam Sela Nosan Lam Sela. Let's say father's instruction to the custodian was, look, you're in charge of my estate, give a shekel to my son, a shekel is a half a sela, and meanwhile, son needs a full sela a week, so give him a full sela a week. V'imamar al tenu lam el a shekel, einos lam el a shekel. However, if dad's instructions were really clear, I know it's not enough money, but still, only give my son one shekel a week, so you have to follow the instructions. V'imamar imesu yeshu achirim tachtem, ben shamar al tenu, einos lam el a shekel. Now, if the father says that, look, after my death, all my estate is going to go over to somebody else. I'm writing off my estate to somebody else, and I'm not giving it to my kids. And a stipend of that estate is going to be going over to the kids, but because they're not going to end up becoming the inheritors of that estate, so therefore you must follow the instructions of the father to the letter. So Amalei Hamani, Rabbi Meir, he. So to which the Gemara says, oh, that brisa or that statement, that is Rabbi Meir's opinion. Da Amar, top of Ayin Amad Aleph, mitzvah lekayim devar ames. You gotta fulfill the mitzvah of somebody who's dying. So if he makes a statement, you have to follow it to the letter. Amar Chis, Amar Maruk, Vehilchasa, Ben Shamar Tenu, Ben Shamar Al Tenu, Nos Nalem Kol Tzorcham. So, Rav Chista says, in the name of Marukva, if there is a custodian and the children need a certain amount, you give them what they need. So Hakamelan Halachah Meir, Damar Mitzvah Kayim Divrei Ames. The Gemara says, wait a second, didn't we just conclude that the halacha is like Rav Meir, and that means that you have to follow the instructions of the deceased word for word? Hani Mila B'Milach Renaisa V'Abaha Meinech Nechele. The Gemara says, yeah, in general that's true, but over here we're talking about providing sustenance for his children. He would have wanted more. And what about the fact that he, in his instruction, he did not give enough money to his children? He wanted to teach them a lesson, and that is, money is not a luxury. Money is important. Meaning, even though the custodian is going to give you enough money, my wish is that you don't have enough money so that you understand the value of money. Tanan Hasan, we learned in a Mishnah, Pu'utos Mecha Mecha Chum Memkara Mekar Bimetatlin. When you are not an adult, but you're getting to the point of adult, right, the age of Pu'utos, 9, 10 years of age, you understand a little bit of what money means, so you can make transactions, but only with movable items. Amara from Loshan Loshain Shama Petropos, Avayesh Shama Petropos, Emekha Mekar. mekar ve memkar mekar. That's true, but only if there's no custodian. If there's a custodian who's in charge of the estate, the children before the age of 13 can't make any transactions, not even with metaltlin. Me and my men diktani and my seketana klum. Look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that with a custodian there, the child can't make any transaction. V'dilma echadika shlishani. The Gemara says, yeah, but maybe it's different in our Mishnah. Now it's true the father appointed a trustee, but the Mishnah says it very generically. My ain maase ketana klum shmamina filo ba'alma. The fact that the Mishnah ends off very generically that a child cannot do anything, that means that while there's a custodian in charge of the estate, a child can't make any transaction, not on movables, not on, certainly not on properties as well. That is the end of the sixth parak. Tomorrow, Mir Hashem, we begin the seventh parak of the Masechta.